This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello everyone. Today I'll be chatting with Dr. Cameron Caswell. Cameron Caswell, PhD, otherwise known as the Teen Translator, is an adolescent psychologist and parent coach, TEDx speaker, host of the Parenting Teens with Dr. Cam podcast, and co-author of Improving School Mental Health, The Thriving School Community Solution. Dr. Cam is the mom of a teen too, so she not only talks the talk, she walks the walk. Dr. Cam also offers a virtual community for parents raising teens called the Thriving Parent Academy. This link, along with her social media handles, podcast, and website, are linked in the show notes below. In today's episode, we talk about the top reasons why our teens stop talking to us, how we can build a strong foundation of trust and open communication with our teens, her opinion on social media and teens, and much more. Let's dive in. Just a little disclaimer before we start this episode. This podcast does not provide medical advice. The information on this podcast is for informational purposes only. No material on this site is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. All right, everybody. Today we have Dr. Cam here on the podcast. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So today we are going to talk about teenagers, which when I became a parent, I feel like this for me was always this dark place that I didn't want to go. I was just like, you know, I'll take my kids when they're young, and then when they're teens, I'm hands off. Like, I don't even know what I'm going to do with them, because I think it's because I look back to my own childhood and I'm like, I was a nightmare.
Yeah. Yes. I think a lot of us either remember the terrible parts or we have it completely blocked out of our memory altogether.
Yeah. So I think to myself, if I have to raise one of me, I don't think I want to do this, right? Like, can I throw in the towel?
How many times did your parents warn you, you know, wait till your parent?
Oh, yeah. You know? Oh, yeah. All the time. And, you know, it's funny because I can't wait to talk to you about this more because, you know, I don't really have experience with this quite yet. My oldest is going to be 11 in the fall. You know, so she's starting to enter into that phase where I really want to keep that connectedness between her and I. Obviously, it's really important. And I don't ever remember losing a connection with my dad was working a lot. And so, you know, obviously he was there, but like I was more connected, obviously, with my mom. And I don't remember anything specific, but I do feel like there wasn't this openness of whatever we wanted to talk about, you know, and that's one thing that I want to make sure that my kids know it's okay for us to have this very open conversation. They can talk to us about anything and everything. So I think we can just start off with maybe talking about what some of the reasons are that our teens decide, like, hey, I don't want to talk to you anymore. Like, what are some of the top reasons why?
I can tell you the key reasons, because I talk to teens every single day. And I, you know, Lindsay, I want to start first of all, because when you started and opened up, you know, you were already dreading the teen years when your kid is a baby, right? And I've seen this before. They're like, look how cute he is. I'm going to love him until he starts hating me. Yes. And we've got this preconceived notion that adolescence is going to suck. And this is what I've been finding, is because we have this belief, and it's, again, because we have traumatic memories from being a teen or have it blocked out, we actually think adolescence is far worse and that teenagers are far worse than they actually are. And this is universal. This isn't just in the United States. Mm-hmm. It's across the board where we have this belief. And if you think about it, not only our own trauma, but how movies and media portrays adolescence and everything else, we see all the negativity. And here's what's crazy. When we go into adolescence expecting it to be difficult, we make it difficult because we start looking for all the signs of, oh my gosh, they're a teenager. Like the first time your child rolls their eyes at three and you're like, oh my God, it's starting.
We're in for it.
Yeah. Oh no. And, you know, we don't realize why that's there. Mm-hmm. So I want to clear that up first of all, that if we go into adolescence just ready to connect with our kids and go, this is actually a really cool stage where they're starting to discover who they are separate from us. And this is their time of exploration. Adolescence is a really cool time, believe it or not. Yeah. I've got an 18-year-old, so I've almost made it completely through it. And I love it. It is amazing. And she's amazing. We fight. We have arguments, of course, because we're human, but not because she's a teen, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think part of this is really understanding that the reason teens stop talking to us is because of our expectations on our teens. We start expecting them to be difficult. So when they respond to us in a way that seems a little snarky or a little has some attitude, we jump on it really quick. Like, see, there's the disrespect.
Yeah.
Rarely, if ever, are they intending to be disrespectful. It is the tone of their voice and the words that they use. They don't hear, first of all, often and realize that. They have difficulty regulating their emotions. So we see a lot of that and we perceive that emotional dysregulation as attitude and disrespect. Mm-hmm. And when we perceive it that way, respond to it that way, and all of a sudden our kid was just trying to have a conversation and we're jumping down their throat for having an attitude and we don't like the way their tone. And why are you going to talk to somebody that's jumping down your throat?
Right.
Right. The other thing is we tend to start focusing more and more on what they're doing wrong when they become teens. When they're little, we have a lot of leeway. We know they're going to fall down. We know they're going to make messes. We know that we have so much patience and leniency for that. When they become a teen, we suddenly expect them to do everything right. And they're still learning how to do this. And we've heard over and over again, the teen brain is still developing. It hasn't developed yet. This means that they're building those connections, those neuro connections right now. They don't have them yet. And this is emotion regulation. This is problem solving. This is even like thinking forward into consequences. They're terrible at it.
Yeah.
So if we expect them to be able to do it and we get mad at them when they don't do it well, it's like yelling at your kid when they're a toddler and falling down when they're learning to walk. That's how I look at it, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're always looking for everything I'm doing wrong and you're always pointing out everything I'm doing wrong, why in the world am I going to hang out and talk with you?
Right.
That's what they tell me. They don't make it fun or easy to talk to. It's easier for me to hide up my room because it's less chance I'm going to get yelled at.
Yeah, makes sense,
that's
right?
It.
You wouldn't, if somebody was, you know, always pointing out what you're doing wrong as an adult, you wouldn't want to hang out with that person either.
I don't hang out with those people.
Exactly.
Like, I'm like, have a nice day. So it's this crazy, and I always think it's so funny because we have this expectation on teens that they will surpass what we're able to do. Mm-hmm. Like, they will always do things right. They will always regulate their emotions. They will all, no. They'll always be motivated because we told them they should be motivated. No, human adults don't do that. Why in the world would teens?
Yeah. Yeah.
So when we have that grace and give them that grace, when we come from a place of curiosity and learning and giving them the benefit of the doubt, knowing that they're always doing the best they can in the moment with what they have, with the stresses they're feeling, when we approach it that way, kids want to talk to us.
Yeah.
I have yet to meet one that doesn't want a better relationship with their parent.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I wanted to mention too, when you said that in the beginning about just these generalizations of how we think of kids and, oh, you know, once they have their own, you know, idea of who they are and they just get snarky and their hormones and this and that. And I feel like there's also those generalizations. I've lost count of the amount of times I've had another parent, and I'm even guilty of saying this, of, okay, well, you have all boys. And so they'll be so crazy when they're younger, but then once they're teens, it'll be, you know, there won't be any drama in your house. As opposed to, we have three girls, one boy, and oh, it's already, you know, it might be easier when they're younger, but wait until they're teenagers. You'll really pay for it then. I feel like there's so much of that.
There really is.
Yeah.
There really is. And I think it's interesting because parents will, you know, they kind of justify the behavior because of the gender of their kids sometimes too, yeah. If that makes sense. And so we have different, and again, we have different tolerances for different behaviors and different expectations, which means we react to it differently, mm-hmm. which just strengthens the very things that we are biased about. Like we're right. creating a lot of those stereotypes because we're kind of in a way making our kids conform to them and the way yeah. we respond to those behaviors. And one thing I see still, and it drives me nuts, is boys, it's okay to be angry, but not sad and cry.
Oh, yeah.
And girls, it's okay to cry, but not to be angry.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but as an adult woman, I still cry when I'm angry because yeah. I don't know how to express anger in a way that I wasn't sent up to my room.
Right.
Right. So I don't know how to do that. But crying got me through to people. It doesn't work as well in the office. Like it just doesn't. Yeah. So I think it's interesting that we have emotions that are acceptable and emotions that aren't. And when we hold emotions back and say they're not acceptable, we don't teach our kids how to express and regulate them in a healthy way.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the one, I don't have a ton of friends that have teenagers. I do have a couple. And one of them had always, this always resonated with me and gave me hope because she was like, no, you don't understand. Once you see all the work that you've put in throughout the years and you see it within this tiny human who is now making their own decisions, it's actually the coolest thing ever to see it kind of come full circle. And you know, her particular teenager, she was just awesome. She actually came over and, you know, played and watched our kids sometimes. And I am very excited for that. And I feel like my connection right now with our oldest, who's almost 11, is very solid. And we have a lot of open communication. And I worry about that open communication not always being there, dependent on, you know, what might be going on in her life or just how she feels about her parents. Like what are some things that we can do as parents to help keep that connection open as they start to enter into like the preteen teen phase?
I love that question. And I love your friend because 100% I agree with your friend is that when we approach and go into adolescence and we see all of the things that we have modeled, first mm-hmm. of all, and that we have really put the seeds in place for, and we see those start to blossom, it's amazing. What we need to do, and I think the hardest thing that parents have when they do this transition is not transition. They continue to parent the same way they've always parented, and they continue to expect their kids to respond the same way they've responded. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't work that way because our kids now are in a different stage of life, and their needs from us and their needs in terms of development are completely different. So now we raised a kid where we were protecting them and we were their guide and we would jump in and do stuff for them and they would slowly learn. Now we need to step way, way, way back. Mm-hmm. And we've got to give them lots of leeway to fail and figure it out and do it the way they need to do it so that they learn. And only when we do that and give them that ability to become more autonomous and still trust them and guide them, but from afar, that's when we can continue to have that connection. We start connecting with them by learning about what they're interested in rather than telling them what they should be interested in. You know, I right. see this a lot with parents who constantly put down, oh my God, my kid only plays video games. Video games are so dumb, or they're on the stupid TikToks and everything else. I'm like, you know what? If you want to bond with your kid, go play the video game with him. If you want to bond with your child, your daughter, go watch TikTok. And I should not genderize that because that was silly. But, you know, go and do makeup tutorials with your kid on TikTok, you know? So I think this is about how do we
adapt to our kid rather than continuing to expect our kid to adapt to us. And that's the biggest difference.
Yeah, it's you have to meet them where they are, you know, and not having them meet your expectations for whatever reason you have those expectations. And, you know, I've definitely kind of fallen into that. I kind of think about this in the way that we have four kids and my oldest has always just fallen into that role of like a third caregiver with our other kids, you know?
Yeah.
And it's so funny because I constantly have to be like, Lindsay, she's eight. You know, this is when she was like younger, like she's 8 years old, like an 8 year old. Think about that for a second. And yeah. It's funny because I can already see the difference between when she was eight and then our other daughter who's eight now, you know, and just that immense responsibility that she had and like our expectations that we had of a kid who's just trying to be a kid, you know, but it can be hard because sometimes you have to do a lot of reflection and think about what are my expectations actually, and can I meet them more where they're at?
It's a hard one because we do as parents have expectations and visions of what our kid will be like and where they will go and what they will do. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure. I've been talking about this more and more frequently because we talk so much about the impact of social media on our kids. Mm. And we fail to notice the impact social media has on us as parents. And I actually see this impacting our relationships with our kids even more than the other way around, because we go and we're on social media and we're looking at how other families look and how other kids look. And I've had so many clients come to me going, how come everyone else's kids do this? How come everyone else? I'm like, everyone else's kids don't do that. They took a 30-second reel and then probably went and continued fighting afterwards. And we don't see that part of it. And so our expectations that we have on us and our families and our kids are so out of control, out of reality. And we're trying so hard to force our kids and ourselves into these boxes that we think everyone else is in. And that's where we all lose it. And so when we throw those out and we go, who is the kid I have? Who is my child? What are their strengths? What makes them unique? What are their challenges? And how do I be the best parent to that child with that challenge to help them embrace that rather than trying to change them to fit what I'm expecting? And this is a really hard one for us parents to let go of and to do, is let go of those expectations.
Yeah, I've actually never thought about or heard about that you just brought up, the effect that it has on us in particular. And, you know, this was one of the many reasons I decided to delete my Instagram account that I had a couple years ago. A, that it was just really toxic for me as a whole. And I knew that I was going to be a better person, better parent for having let it go completely. And I thought to myself, you know, what are our values as a family? And what do I hope, you know, for my own kids? And we were like, we want them to value in-person connection. We want them to value just empathy for others, connectedness. And I was like, social media in general is just not going to be part of that. And I can't sit here, you know, having this business on social media and then also go to my kid and say, hey, this is not part of our values. It doesn't make sense, you know? And so it's just ultimately, you know, that, you know, on top of a couple other things, just really fueled me to say, you know what, enough is enough. Like this is going to be the best decision, not only for myself, but for my family as a whole. And I want to emulate what I hope for them. I want to demonstrate that. And I think that's so important because, you know, everybody talks about modeling for your kids, like model this, model that. And our kids do, they learn a lot from us and they watch us. And you know, we can't sit here and give them all these rules and regulations around social media, but then not also have them ourselves. And you know what I mean? And
oh, I do. Lindsay, I've actually had parents and been sitting there talking to parents and their kid, and the parents are complaining about how much their kid is on tech while the parent is on tech right during that conversation. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh boy. And I want to kind of address that just a little bit, if you don't mind too.
Yeah.
The social media thing is not going away. And I think it's important for parents. This is another thing that we struggle with a lot for parents because we didn't grow up with it. Yes, no, we didn't. And so, yes, we were fine not having social media because we didn't have social media.
Right.
So that argument is silly, just FYI. I lived without it. My kid can. No, our world is different. Our kids, let's be real, our kids' life and their culture and the way they connect and the way they relate to people is through social media. It is what it is, what it is, whether we like it or not. So what we need to do as parents, we need to now learn how to help them have healthy habits around it. Because it's kind of saying, oh, well, you can't eat because it's bad. We got to eat, right?
Yeah.
And so social media is how they connect with one another. It's how they know what the world is. It's how they calm themselves. It's how they entertain themselves. It's how they educate themselves. It's where everyone's at. I remember growing up, TV was banned in our house, right?
Yeah.
It was so frowned upon.
Yeah.
And I would go to school and everyone would be talking about what was on TV the night before. And I felt so isolated.
Yeah.
Because my parents were trying to teach me and it was the right reason. Like, you don't need that to suck you up. But I was out of the pop culture.
Yeah.
I wasn't in it. And so if you don't know what the TikTok trends are or the things like that, you kind of feel like I'm isolated. And teens need to feel like they belong. They are desperate for any way that they can feel like they belong. So I think it's more about how do we help them create a healthy habit with it where we learn to moderate it. And that, again, is by what we do too. We help them learn to be more just discerning on what they see and what's reality. I just did an interview about the Sephora kids and how Sephora kids are just, and it's, again, it's a sense of belonging. Like, there's always been trends that kids want to be a part of. It's now really expensive face products, you know? So it's like, how do we help them navigate that and see what's realistic and what's not? And also, how do we help them follow people that are helping and promoting a positive self-image and promoting, you know, knowledge? Because there's some great content out there and there's a lot of crap. And if we follow the great content, some kids really find a place where they're like, oh my gosh, yeah. I'm okay.
Yeah.
Look, these kids are okay too.
Yeah. This is something I really struggle with. And I really appreciate your like candidness around the topic because I am definitely one of those people where I'm like, you know, I grew up in the 90s. Like, let's just go back to the 90s. Like, this is too much. Which I'm sure the parents of television era felt the same, right? 100%.
Yeah. The radio era. What's this radio everyone's listening to?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, every generation has crazy technology.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I do think definitely part of it is you absolutely cannot be hands off when you're handing over this type of a device to your kid. Like, you definitely need to be involved. And so I am just happy that I have a couple more years to think on this and to figure out what, as a family, we want to do about it. Because right now, I do feel like there's been a little bit of a switch in the past couple years where a lot of my daughter's friends, like their parents, feel the same way as we do. And so honestly, phones haven't really been an issue. She's asked me for a phone once and I said no and it was done. And she doesn't care. And I just don't think she's going to be the kind of kid that cares. There are some kids that really care, right? And there are just some that don't. And, you know, thankfully, she's just doesn't really seem to care. Now, that doesn't mean it won't change, but we're still kind of navigating like how to kind of handle not really the phone. I don't mind if she has some sort of like flip phone where she can call me. Like, that's not a concern to me. Although I put a lot of value on our kids knowing what to do in the face of, you know, an emergency or something without a phone, because I feel like that can be sometimes an issue if you give a kid like this instant access to be able to get information or be able to get in touch with somebody whenever, wherever. And that's not always the case. You know, your phone might die, it might get lost, you might, you know, whatever it is. And I want my kids to be able to navigate society without a phone before they're given one, type of thing.
I think a lot of adults need to learn how to do that. Can you teach? I need to learn that. Man, I can't get anywhere without my GPS.
Well, you know, a couple years ago, my friend was like, I'm going to get a light phone. And I was like, what's a light phone? And so then I look into it and I'm like, could I do this? And ultimately was like, I don't think I could do this. And honestly, it was because of the navigation. I was like,
oh yeah,
I need the navigation. Like, it's just my life is too busy to be like figuring out the navigation.
Yeah.
On MapQuest.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Or how about, you know, the maps that you used to have to roll out, right?
So, right.
You know, there's some great technology. And I even say this when we talk about the technology with our kids too, this is part of teaching them how to use it as a healthy tool rather than, you know, this addictive. And we know that they're created to be addictive. And we have a very low tolerance of boredom now. We have no tolerance for boredom because we never have to be bored. Yeah. Adults too. I was reading a study, I think it was a 2016 study that found that adults would rather shock themselves than sit with their thoughts for 15 minutes.
Yes, I saw that. And I thought to myself, that's so true.
I know. I'm like, where's the shock machine? It's so true because we have low tolerance because our brains, we haven't trained our brain. We don't know how to sit in that discomfort and get through the discomfort to get to the creativity.
Right.
And so we're losing a really big piece of just our ability to reflect, our ability to be creative, our ability even to just think about the world because we don't have time to do it because we're always stimulating our brain with something out external.
Yeah.
And that, so we need to make sure we've got times where we're like, phone free. We detox from the phone. And I love doing that. But also, how do we use the tools on the phone? Like, there's a lot of amazing apps for time management, which teens struggle with, you know, coping skills that teens struggle with. There's just a ton of things that you can go, how can we use this device for good? And I think there's a lot of ways we can. We just have to be very intentional about it and help our kids learn to be intentional about it.
So I would love to hear from you about what your ideal way to introduce a phone. And I mean, obviously, and this is separate. Social media would be separate from actually introducing the phone. How did you, I guess, handle that? And would you have changed at all the way you handled it?
So I originally got, and I don't even know if they make them anymore. I got my daughter one of the watches that could just, you could like send a quick little email. Like it was just one of those little things because I had dropped her off at school for, you know, some activity and left because she walked into the school and did it and left and then came back and picked her up an hour and a half later and it had been canceled and she had no way of contacting me. Mm-hmm. No way. And I'm like, okay, I went right to the store right then. I'm like, that's just silly. We don't need that. It's not going to happen again.
Yeah.
So I went and bought her one of those so she can connect. And she did that probably for about a year. And it was like, Mom, this sucks. This is, you know, this is really weird. So I did go and get her. And I'm trying to even remember. Isn't that terrible? I can't even remember how old she was, but she was probably about 12 or 13. Yeah. And got her phone. And it could have been even a little bit earlier, to be honest. But it was something where she had all she could do was the calling at first, right?
Yeah.
So it is about slowly giving them access to more and more things as you feel confident that they're doing it. And I'm fortunate that my daughter is extremely responsible, partly my parenting, partly because I just lucked out. But she's an extremely responsible kid. And we talk openly about the dangers. We watch the movies together, right? We watch all kinds. We'll even watch silly shows, but talk about the reality of it. Mm-hmm. And so she's very aware of that. The other thing is really understanding why they need it. So what social media or what apps are they using and why do they need it? And here's the thing that I want to make sure parents are aware of is if we don't have those conversations with our kids and we just tell them you only can have this and we're not clear on why and we're not clear on why they need it, our kids will just go get it. And even if we block it on their phone, they're accessing it on their friends' phones.
Right.
Like, let's just be real. So we can't just say don't do it and expect them not to do it. Because if all of their friends are doing it and there's curiosity there, they're going to find a way. So we want to have constant open communication. And so one of the things is, you know, when they're first doing it, maybe you have the app on your phone first and they can use your phone for a while. Mm-hmm. Or you have the app on their phone, but you go through and you make sure all of their privacy settings are set so that it is very limited. I was fortunate when my daughter got on Instagram that I had been mentoring lots of teenagers that were older than her who were also on Instagram. So if they saw anything little sus on there that they're like, I don't know, because my daughter didn't do anything intentionally, but she would do stuff in on it, right? You just don't think. They'd be like, just FYI, this is on there. And I'm like, okay, great. And I would have a very open, non-judgmental conversation about it. That I really recommend if you can have that. Was really helpful because then I'm not spying on her. I've got cool kids that are, you know, just testing in on her. So that way, and then whenever a mistake was made, which never was made intentionally, it's a conversation. You know, it's not a shaming thing. It's just a, hey, just FYI, I want you to realize that this is what happens. What can we do instead?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so hard because you hear just so much around, and I'm sure you hear about this all the time from parents, just like, oh, anxiety and depression and suicide is up amongst teens. And, you know, it's always girls more than boys. And I find it hard. Personally, I find it hard not to believe that social media may have some sort of a role in that. I found it to be toxic for my own, just from my own personal experience. I can take that personal experience and put it into my 14-year-old, 15-year-old body and be like, wow.
Oh, God. Yeah.
The effects that would have had on me at that age. Just that feeling of not feeling good enough. Do I have enough friends? Is my outfit cool enough? Just the comparison game is hard enough in high school. And then you add in that additional factor of the comparison online where you can never disconnect from it. You know, like when we went to school, we could disconnect from it for a full, you know, whatever, 16 hour until we had to go back to school again. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on what do you suggest we say to our kids when it comes to, you know, the comparison game, especially on social media? Like, how do you approach it?
Oh boy, I love this topic so much because there's so much to this. I want to say the part with the anxiety and depression. Yes, we have a lot of, and we've seen an increase in numbers, but I want to be clear too, there's a few reasons why that is. One is there's a lot more awareness of mental health. So we didn't diagnose it or know about it, especially kids didn't know about it, and kids now know about it, mainly because of social media, right? Mm-hmm. That they know about it. The other thing, though, I think is important is that we have not only has our tolerance for boredom decreased, but our tolerance for not feeling okay has decreased. We have this belief that if we are not happy, something's wrong with us, that if we're sad, we're depressed. If we're nervous, we're anxious. And we need to make sure that we're not making normal, everyday, healthy emotions something that is wrong with us. So we also need to really, and I always encourage parents to change the language and not constantly call everything depression and anxiety.
Yeah.
Those are clinically, you know, those are issues that we need to get addressed, but sadness and nervousness is not. So changing the language, I think, is really important. So with that said, I think the other thing is you're right about the comparisons. It's not only is it 24/7, but also there is no way you can't find somebody that is better at something than you are on social media because you're comparing yourself to the whole world. And teens have this very black and white view that if one person is better than them at something, that means they suck.
Yeah.
Like you can't both be good.
Yeah.
Either you're the best or you're the worst. So now every kid's the worst at something. And if they're better, then I can't say that I'm this. And that makes them feel terrible. So there is a lot of that. The number one factor that protects our kids from that is their relationship with us and their ability to be able to communicate those fears and those concerns and those worries to us in a safe place where we will empathize and listen to them, not say, no, you're not, you're wrong, you're pretty, that's what we go to, right? We're always like, no, you're pretty too. Well, you have to say that, you're the parent. And we do have to say that because we're the parent, they know that. So that doesn't help and it doesn't change how they feel. So when we sit there and go, oh man, yeah, like I was on there the other day too. And yeah, I get that comparison and it's hard.
it's hard to feel that way. Let's look more into that. Let's look into these kids, right? And what they're doing and looking at the filters they're using and looking at, I think we also always want to be focused on when they're not on social media and everything, focusing on what our kids are doing correct, what they're doing right, because kids start feeling not only online that they're not good enough, but they start feeling at home that they're not good enough and at school that they're not good enough because we're always focused on what they're doing right. I had a kid the other day, a client come in who had finally gotten all A's, all A's. Her parents had been pushing, and she did. And I'm like, oh, you must be so proud. And she goes, well, a teacher had a comment that I talk too much and my parents are really upset. I know we say that, but we all do this.
Yeah.
We do this all the time. That seems so obvious to us, but in that moment, we go right to the thing that needs to be fixed.
Of course, yeah.
Because that's our job.
Yeah.
And so when we're constantly giving them that message that they're not good enough, that they need to do it, and then they go online. So social media, I don't believe, is the main culprit. It definitely makes things worse by far. But they have shown that kids who are on social media, who have strong relationships with their family, have that confidence and self-esteem, are more creators than just people that consume, right? So they go on and they create stuff. It does not have the same negative impact as the kids that have low self-esteem outside of it are constantly just consuming, not creating. So that just builds on top of that. You know what I'm saying? So we can prevent it or we can make it worse. And that's really up to us and how we work on our relationship with our kid.
Yeah. No, I mean, it makes complete sense. Yeah. And honestly, it's all very refreshing because I feel like many of us live in our own little bubbles where we're always looking for confirmation bias.
Right? Oh, gosh.
And I see an article pop up in my email and it's like, social media, not good for teens, you know? And I'm like, yeah. But like, I so appreciate just your approach because it isn't going away. It will be here for the inevitable future. And we do need to figure out a way to be able to introduce this to our kids and, you know, walk them through what they're seeing and how they're feeling about it. And just as important as it is to keep that connection open with them just about their everyday life, but also what they're seeing either on social media or on the internet in general, the more you keep that connection open, the more you're able to cultivate, you know, this healthy, positive experience.
100%. And I think what's really important in that bias is really, I'm glad you brought that up too, because I think what happens is we put all of our attention on this bad thing over here that we have zero control over and that distracts us from actually doing things that we can, that are actually within our control that can resolve the issue. Mm-hmm. So now not only am I not resolving blaming this and spending all my time here, I'm not addressing what's right behind, right underneath my nose that I can address.
Right.
So that is an excuse and I get it. And it is frustrating. There's a lot of stuff out there that's bad. There's also a lot of stuff out there that is good. And there's other studies that have shown that when parents have a healthy relationship and are able to just embrace technology, say this is what it is, and have a healthy relationship with it, there it has a less negative impact on their kids too.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I mean, you think about like the things that your parents didn't let you do, right? The second your parents put a big red X over something that you wanted to do, you're like, well, I'm going to do it anyway.
I'm a TV addict now because I wasn't allowed to watch it.
Yeah.
I have to make for my entire childhood of not watching TV. Let's be real.
Yes. No, it's so true. It's so funny because, you know, you think back to your own childhood so much when you're raising your own kids. And it's funny because, and oh my gosh, if my parents were listening to this, they're probably like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that. But when I was in high school, I drank more in high school than, and not that my parents were, they actually weren't super like, they weren't, they let me kind of like have, you know, I had a curfew that was pretty much normal for everybody else. And they weren't, you know, like, don't do this. But I just, every time my mom was like, don't, you know, make smart choices. Like, yeah. And no smart choices were made. But it's funny because I got to college. And by the time I got to college, I was like, all right, let's get ready to learn. Like, I'm ready. And granted, I still, you know, went out with friends and stuff. By the time I got to college, though, I wasn't
off the rails, like ready to, because I just kind of did everything in high school. And then by the time I got to college, I was like, well, I actually want to like learn and earn this degree. And I didn't as much want to do those things. But I do feel like a lot of kids will come to college and they're like, well, I was never able to do any of this stuff. So they just go off the rails.
That was me. Like I was the very straight A, very well-behaved kid, still grounded all the time because I talked back. But I thought I was self-advocating, but apparently that was not how it was perceived. But I went to college and I was like, wah!
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Woo! So I think too, and that's another thing where we think teens are not human, because we're like, if we tell teens not to do this, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? The second we tell them not to do it, and then they see us as adults doing it, they're like, well, that's an adult thing. I want to be an adult.
Yeah.
You know, that's far more attractive.
Of course.
I always tell parents this with the phones too, like stop taking phones away as punishment, because all you're doing is feeding into their addiction. Because now phones have become this sought after thing. We put more and more and more value on it because now they don't know, and it becomes a scarcity mindset and a thing of like, this is having phone good, not having phone bad.
Yeah.
Like, we don't want to do
that.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So we're creating this mentality. So please stop. It also doesn't help anything.
Yeah.
I've never taken my phone away from my daughter once, and she's 18.
It's so true though. So let's say, because this is going to happen a million times over, your teen has an attitude.
Oh,
okay.
What? Yeah.
And your teen has an attitude. They're criticizing you. They're criticizing everyone, whatever it might be. How am I handling that situation in the
this
moment?
This is a great situation, and you're absolutely 100% it's going to happen. Here's the mentality of what's going on with our teenagers. When they become teens, it's like they're putting a pair of glasses on and they see the world in a far different way than they always have. They're much more aware of how people are perceiving them. And so there's this, it's egocentrism, right? It's not egomania. It's egocentrism where it's difficult for them to see the world from other perspectives. They haven't developed that ability yet. And so kids feel it's this spotlight effect where they feel that everybody is looking at them and everything is about them. And I know adults that are this way too, but kids particularly, even when you're at home, I'll do something and my daughter will be like, Mom, that's so embarrassing. And I'll look around, I go, who? There's no one around. Who am I embarrassing? Because it feels like there's always an audience, right?
Yeah.
Now, parents are part of who they feel as a kid, right? So we're an extension of them, just as our kids are an extension of us. So whenever we do anything that is even remotely embarrassing to them, they're like, oh my gosh, you know, it's so when they put us down, it really is this mentality of and a reflection of how they're viewing themselves, right? We're a reflection of that. So chances are whatever's coming out of their mouth is something that they've already been telling themselves for a while. Also, the things that we say to our kids, which is why I really strongly encourage parents to hold back when they want to say something negative or call their kid a name or label their kid lazy or anything else. Please refrain from that, because that becomes our internal dialogue and our internal view of who we are. And so when we do that and we hear that, I would see that as, oh my gosh, that gives me insight into what is going on in my child's head, not how my child necessarily views me. One of the things we have to do as parents, and it's so difficult, is we need to stop making our kids' behavior and dysregulation about ourselves. It has nothing to do with us. Mm-hmm. And when we make it about ourselves, our own emotions get involved, and then we no longer have the ability to respond in an effective way. We become more about protecting ourselves. When we stop and go, and get curious about what is this saying about my teen? Why would my teen want to be saying this? What's going on? Let me get curious about that. And we respond in a more compassionate way of, you know, I notice that you're putting yourself down, you're putting me down. What's going on? And now we're just getting into their mindset. And a lot of times it'll be like, I'm just really stressed out, or today was a really bad day, or I don't feel like you're listening to me or understanding me. When kids yell, I hate you, what I understand from that is not I hate you, but I hate the way you're making me feel about me.
Yeah.
That's what that is. So we need to stop making it about us and start getting curious about what it's saying about our kids and what our kids are trying to communicate to us.
Yeah, it's funny. We have a kid who struggles a lot with school in particular. And so when she gets home, it's like this, you know, this is the comfort for her, you know, is at home. And so everything, all the floodgates open once she's home. And we just recently kind of figured all this out because she's still young. Yeah. And I used to take it all so personally. And for those listening, we're talking about you raising a teen. And like, we know it's hard and we're going to make a million mistakes, right? And so just like I was making mistakes with her where I was like taking this so personally, like, why are you always coming home like this? Why are you, what is it about just being at home and me that you, you know, you hate so much? But it's like, that's where they feel comfortable. That's where it's going to come out. And what is the saying about my kid has nothing to do with me. And so if I could write probably one thing on my wall in my kitchen where we are most likely, that's the space we use the most, it would be like, this isn't about you. This isn't about how they feel about, this is about them and how they feel. And like, let's figure that out because it could apply to so much. And I feel like it would also decrease the amount of arguing in my house by like
1,000%. And it's backhanded compliment in a way, because when our kids come home and they are acting out at home, it is definitely a sign that they feel safe there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because kids are exhausted trying to sit still, trying to pay attention, trying to navigate the social landscape, trying to understand what their teacher is trying to tell them and not getting in trouble. They come home and they're just done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I have parents go, all they do is lay around and they complain about how stressed they are. And I never see them do anything. And I'm like, because you're not following them around at school all day.
Right.
That's why you don't see them do anything.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah,
it's draining. So we've got to understand that too.
Yeah. It's like us coming home from work. We've had this exhausting day. A million things have happened. We come home. And then the second I see my partner, I'm like, ah! And they're like, oh, gee.
Yeah.
What did I do to you? And you're like, well, nothing, but I need someone to unload on.
You're a safe person. And it sucks that we have to take the brunt of that. And I think I want to, it's important, Lindsay, also to know that we have to take care of ourselves too. This doesn't mean we become a whipping post or a doormat. That is not at all what I'm saying. I think it's first not taking it personally and dealing, you know, helping your kids through it. But also if you're feeling some kind of way and you're feeling like this is too much, we need to set our own limits and mm-hmm. respect our own limits. And I think this is another thing that as humans, we don't do very well. I don't do it well at all. I tell people how to do it, but I still don't do it well. But we get mad at other people for disrespecting our boundaries and stepping over our boundaries. And that's not what it's about. They're working, they're focused on their own boundaries and making sure their needs are met, not our needs. So it's our job to make sure our needs are met while they're making their needs, right? So if you're feeling like your kid is saying stuff to you and you're like, that's mean, I'm not okay with that. The point of that is saying, you know what? It's okay for you to be angry. I'm going to validate your feeling. It's not okay. And I don't feel okay being talked to that way. It makes me feel, and this is the I's, right? Those I statements mm-hmm. where everyone rolls their eyes at the I statements, but they're so powerful because it doesn't place blame. It just says, I'm feeling attacked. I'm going to walk away because I'm not okay with that. When you're ready, I'm here to listen. And now we are setting, we're not yelling at them for being disrespectful at us. We're just saying, you be mad.
Yeah.
I'm not okay being talked to that way. So I'm going to remove me.
Yeah.
And now we're modeling to them how to respect their own boundaries. And yeah. Lindsay, one of the scariest things I have heard numerous times that we do as parents and we don't realize is we teach our kids that they're not allowed to say no. Because when they say no to us, we get extremely upset with them. We tell them they're being disrespectful. And I have had kids in really horrible situations where they did not feel or know how to say no because they had never been able to say it before.
Oh, yeah.
So we need to let our kids say no to us. We can teach them how to say it in a respectful way. But they need to be able to say it. We need to respect if we, you know, if they say, I don't want a hug, don't give them a hug. Yeah. Respect that, please. Yeah. If they say, I need time alone, respect that. Because we need to allow them to set their own boundaries. And we focus on setting and respecting our own boundaries.
Yeah. Two little examples on that is, you know, the grandparent, I feel like it's always like a grandparent thing, like, okay, go give grandpa a hug before we leave. And one of our kids would be like looking at me like, do I have to? And I'm like, yeah. Oh, no, you can just do a high five, you know? So, yeah, I think that's so, so important. Or like, we have this amazing caretaker for our kids. She's in college and she's not often available, but she's one of my favorite people because the first time that she met my kids, she was like, how do you like to say goodbye? Do you like to high five? Do you like to say bye? Do you like to hug? Do you like? And I was like, that is genius. And how is this person who's 23 smarter than me?
Yeah.
I swear to you. Like, I was like, wow. Yeah. And so, one of my, we all have like our triggers, right? And mine is when I make dinner and no one eats it. So that's like one of my top three. Fun thing about me. I lose my mind when I cook dinner and my kids don't like it. So I have taught them. So this, and this wasn't how I reacted in the beginning. You should know that for people listening. Okay. Like, I was not always this calm, cool, and collected. But now, so now I'm like, okay, I cooked dinner and it's all available. And I have taught my kids. I said, listen, I get that you might not like what's for dinner, but we have to be respectful about it because I feel really sad when, you know, I've spent an hour cooking and, you know, you all say, no, I'm not eating it, and you won't even sit at the table with me. So we have come to the conclusion that they're allowed to, they come up to me and they say, you know, gosh, dinner looks really good, Mom, but I'm not really feeling it. I don't really want to try it. And so just that little like shift in how they're talking to me, like they're saying no. And, but they're like, thank you for dinner. I'm just not interested.
Is you coach so them on how to do that, right?
Yeah. It's so much better because I look at them and I'm like, all right, well, okay, well, just sit with me. I just want some company while I eat it, you know? But it's just, it's so much better than the ew, because they would just be like, ew, I'm not eating that. And they'd run away.
Right.
And I was like, take that personal, you know, and as a parent of like,
you. Yeah. Yeah.
Pair of young kids, I'm like, I'm gonna lose my absolute mind. Like, but yeah, just teaching them to say no, but in that way that you don't feel like inflamed by it, you know? And right. So I kind of like was like, how am I gonna, they're clearly still gonna say no to dinner. How can I make this an enjoyable experience for the both of us? Like, teach them. Yeah.
That's exactly it. It's not getting mad at them for saying no. It's just saying, let's learn how to say no in a way that feels better to other people. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing, and this is another thing I hear from parents a lot, particularly moms, let's be real. Moms are like, I give and I give and I give and I give and I get no respect in return. I get nothing in return. And here's my take on this. We often give and give and give what we feel is our, and we get kind of into the love language and the stuff, but what we feel is showing love to them, right? And we're making the decisions. They've not asked us most of the time to do this. The kids didn't ask you to make that particular meal. We decide, because I love my kids and because it's important to me, I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. So when we make those decisions, what we need to do is take away the expectation of getting something in return. Because if we give it, and we get resentful to the person for not appreciating what we gave, then we're not giving out of giving. We're giving to get.
Right.
And now we're setting them up to disappoint us and for us to be mad.
Right.
So I tell parents, if they feel like they're giving and giving and giving, then they need to go to the line and say, how much am I wanting to give because they're my kid and because it's my responsibility and because I love them? And when you get past that and you start resenting them, then you need to take a step back.
Right.
And you need to go, what is my giving that they're not needing or that I don't need to be giving? We also need to understand that how our kids receive love is not necessarily what we're giving them. So and I've heard this a lot too, where parents are like, I give and give and give, but what they're giving isn't anything that their kids are receiving as love. A lot of times they're receiving it as control or they're receiving it as expectations and not love. And so they don't feel loved, which is why they're resentful, because they're not getting what they need to feel loved. They're getting all this other stuff plus the resentment and none of the stuff that makes them feel okay.
Right.
So we need to stop and going, if my kids are not appreciative of what I'm giving, am I giving them the right things?
Right.
And why am I doing it?
Well, it makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm so sad because we have to wrap this up. And I have like a million things I want to talk to you about. But here we are.
You know, I could go on this for hours, which I do.
I love it. So let's wrap up. I usually ask my guests two questions at the end of every conversation. So the first question I have for you is, if you could give one piece of advice to moms, it doesn't have to be related to what we talked about today, what would it be?
Yeah, there's so many things. Let me think about this for a second, because the first thing is, I've asked people this and they're always like, give yourself grace. Well, yeah, give yourself grace. But I want to give you a tip that's actually you can use for yourself. And I think that one is, before getting upset, get curious. Use that as your initial response, is what is going on that I don't understand, rather than making that assumption. So every time your teen responds to you in a way and you don't, it's triggering you or anything else, have your reflex kind of go to your reaction as, what am I missing? And get curious.
Yes. Yes. I love that. Maybe I'm going to print that out and put it in my kitchen.
It is one of my main mantras.
Yeah. I love it.
Be curious.
All right. If you could make one meal for your family that everyone would eat, that's relatively quick and easy, what would it be?
Well, this is unfair because it's just me and my daughter, and I would just run across the street and get some sushi.
Hey, no, that, listen, that counts.
We get sushi and ice cream. That is our bachelor night meal.
We go
across the street, buy a thing of, yeah, and we're done.
That's amazing. That's so awesome. I just went on this whole binge of Love is Blind, and I'm not usually this person I was like, oh, the show is so awful, but like, I'm so into this.
My daughter and I watch every show like that together, and we have so much fun. And we talk about like the conversations, but we use it for conversations because we talk about editing. We talk about like how they're making people look. We're talking about like how
I love that
so much social dynamics and how people should be treated out of those terrible. And
yeah,
I love them.
I love it. That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for this conversation, Dr. Cam. This was absolutely amazing. And maybe we'll have to have you on again sometime in the future.
Anytime.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. All resources mentioned in this episode can be found in the show notes on lindsayandco.com. To continue these important conversations, head over to Motherhood Meets Medicine on Instagram. Let me know what you learned from this episode and who you would love to hear from next. I always love getting feedback from you. If you're finding value in this podcast, please rate, review, subscribe, and share with a friend. This will help us to reach even more women from around the world. I'll catch you next week. Until then, don't forget to find some time to unplug, unwind, and have a little fun.